Every one of my books, one flows from the other. And the first was Where the Hell is God, about my sister's car accident and trying to come to grips with that and her being left a quadriplegic and how you could hold on to a God of love in the face of that terrible trauma. And then out of that came Why Bother Praying? Because what I said about prayer in that book, some people found fairly challenging and in fact didn't like it.
What did they not like?
They didn't like the fact that I said that God doesn't control the weather. And as sort of silly as that sounds, it does indicate a deeper thing, that God's in control of everything, including the rain. And so I was encouraging them not to pray for rain, and that I couldn't believe in a meteorological God. So then I decided, actually, I do want to say something about prayer, because I think prayer is very rich in the Catholic tradition, but we haven't been introduced to its riches, and we often just reduce it to praying for someone about something somewhere. And so I wanted to say something more about prayer and why we pray and what it does. And then this third book came out of a wonderful conversation on a plane between me and a young American man who, I must admit that I often sit down and put my earphones in my ears fairly quickly on a plane, because being an Australian, we have very, very long flights. And if you get stuck just next to somebody on that flight, you know, that's a long time to hear their confession, I can assure you. And I was a bit slow on the uptake this day, and this wonderfully accomplished and articulate young man asked me what I did, and I told him I was a Catholic priest, and he said he was a Catholic, and I noticed the past tense, but let it pass. And then I said, and then we got talking some more, and then he talked about the struggles about faith and religion and being a Catholic. And then he said, you know, I've just finished reading two books by a Jesuit. And he said, I don't know if you know them. And he said, one's called Where the Hell is God? And the other's called Why Bother Praying? And I said, I can't believe that. I thought I was going to be on candid camera, that there was a camera in this plane and soon they're going to come out from the toilets at the back and say, surprise. And he said, do you know them? And I said, I know them very well. I wrote them. And he wouldn't believe me. So I had to get my passport out. It wasn't control check. I had to prove that I'd written the books. Anyway, he couldn't believe his luck. And he said, oh, I want to ask you a few questions. So in row 52 of the New York to Los Angeles flight on Qantas, we were sitting there having, we couldn't say it's Theology 101, it quickly became Theology 404. It was a pretty serious discussion. I think everybody around us wanted earphones up, by the way. they weren't asking these questions, but we both were. And then in the middle of it, he said, the hardest thing, you know, about belief is not about pain and suffering, that's an important one, not about prayer, that's important. It's really the fundamental question about why are we here? Like, what are we doing on earth for Christ's sake? And he meant it as a throwaway line, so he immediately apologized for saying for Christ's sake in front of a priest. And I corrected him and said, look, I know that is often a cuss line, it's a throwaway line, but everything we do is meant to be, if we're baptized, is meant to be for Christ's sake. So that got me thinking, and his challenge about then saying something to particularly young people, but all of us, about having confidence in our faith when the rest of the world tells us we're nuts or we're crazy or we're mentally deficient, so we need a sky daddy in heaven and all that sort of stuff. That led to this book. So it's dedicated to Tommy, who was the young man I met on that plane, and it's bookended by telling that story at the beginning, and then at the very end I write a letter to Tommy finally. And in between then I explore all the sorts of issues very simply and excessively about Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and how the challenges that they might say to people of faith. That's chapter one. Chapter two is picking up questions that young Catholics and Christians ask about the faith and trying to answer them as clearly and honestly as I can. And even where there's grey and there's doubt, saying, you know, we can't solve all of these things. And then finally, because what we do is much greater than what we say, I give 11 portraits of Christians and Catholics who have inspired me. Some of them are canonized saints. Some of them never will be canonized, but probably should. And others of them, no one except me would know until I wrote about them. And they've inspired to me to live faith, hope and love.
And who are some of the names we might know in your list of 11?
We've got St. Thomas More and St. Ignatius Loyola.
Why Thomas More?
Thomas More, he was my local parish. And so my local parish in Australia is St. Thomas More's in South Toowoomba in Queensland, Australia. And I grew up always having a great devotion to him. I took the name Thomas, not after Thomas More, but after Thomas the Apostle, the doubter. But nonetheless, Thomas was always in there. And I guess when I lived in London too for a couple of years, I went to the Tower of London, I went to the room in which he was held for years. And I always thought he was just an extraordinary man of conscience. He's now become much more controversial because Hilary Mantel wrote Wolf Hall, and it's now a television production as well. And she makes him out to be fanatic, an absolute maniac. And I thought it was terribly unfair, the portrayal of Moore in that book. So I also wanted to, not that Thomas Moore needs me to defend him, because he's in heaven with God, but I did think that that was an unfair character assassination. And I think Moore, it wasn't a fanatic. I think he was certainly a man of his time, and he was certainly prepared to go to martyrdom. But honestly, this is a man for whom his conscience just couldn't allow him to move beyond what he thought was to be right and what was to be true. And I think that's to be honoured, not pilloried. But there are some women in there. We've got St. Mary MacKillop, Australia's first saint.
She founded which order?
She founded the Sisters of St. Joseph, the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and they're Australia's first religious order. She's an amazing person because, to my knowledge, she's the only saint in the Catholic Church's history that's gone from being excommunicated to being to be canonised. Now, she was excommunicated by a local bishop, but it had the same impact as though the Vatican had done it in those days. In 1871, she was refused all sacraments.
Why?
Well, it all became about power. You know, when women want to assert too much power against bishops, well, sadly, Mary Ward, Mary Aikenhead, Nan O'Nagle, Catherine McCauley, they've all had a tough time with bishops. And this particular bishop was a Franciscan, Archbishop Scheel, and he excommunicated her because she wanted to run her own order, and he wanted the order to be a diocesan order with the bishop having the final say and the authority over it. And she just held her absolute ground. But I, with all of these pen portraits, I try and give a different take on them. So I tell the reader something they don't know.
They didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Well, and big one for her is that the only way the excommunication could be lifted was she had to get to Rome. She was dirt poor, and her spiritual director and her confessor were two Austrian Jesuits in Adelaide in 1871, and they were dirt poor, so none of them could afford the fare. So there's this great story about how a Presbyterian woman called Joanna Barsmith and a Jewish man called Emmanuel Solomon paid the fare for Mary MacKillop, a first-class fare for Mary MacKillop to get to Rome. So, because they thought she did great work, particularly with the rural poor and with women and children and all the wonderful work she was doing. And they thought what had happened to her was an absolute scandal. So we've got a Jew and a Presbyterian who eventually pay the fare. The Jesuits were able to provide all the introduction. So it sounds like the beginning of a joke. You know, there was once a Jew, a Presbyterian, and a Jesuit. That sounds as though they went into a bar. If it wasn't for the conspiracy of those three people, one with the contacts and the other two with the money, then we wouldn't have a saint. And she was just the most remarkable woman because she was so forgiving. Like, to the end of her life, she held no rancor against the men who treated her so terribly. And, of course, that helped a cause for canonization, and it inspires me to be a more forgiving person.
Wonderful story. Who else have you in the list? One or two more names of the well-known.
I've Oscar Romero's in there. The Trappists of monks of Algeria are in there, the ones who were assassinated. And the beautiful film of Gods and Men, and that's the reason. That was my introduction to them. But I've now got a great devotion to them. I tell the story of my family, my mother and sister and brother and sister-in-law, who really have just been so wonderful, in particularly my mother and brother and sister-in-law, in caring for my sister, who's 26 years a quadriplegic now. They don't like it when I tell these stories. They tell me to shut up and get other material. And they think that, you know, my mother says, oh, God, I hope everybody doesn't think our family's perfect. So I'm in trouble because in this book I say my mother hopes the world doesn't think we're perfect, you know, whereas we're quite dysfunctional like every other family I know. And now I'm in trouble for telling the world we're dysfunctional, so I can't win. But they're a wonderful, loving group of people and very normal Catholic Australian family. And they inspire me because they just do small things so well.
So the book is called
What Are We Doing on Earth for Christ's Sake?
Published by
Paulist Press in New York, but available in Ireland and throughout the United Kingdom with Auburn Books.
And it's roughly around 13 to 15 euro, that kind of price?
It's about 15 euros, I think, here in Ireland. And I hope it's going to be very helpful for grandparents and parents, for teachers, for everybody who really has ever had the discussion with anybody about the questions that our faith can throw up for other people. And for those of us who might need to be reaffirmed, encouraged and inspired to keep living the way, the truth and the life.